Welcome to The Gathering Resources. The following audio is from our breakout session entitled, How to Raise a Digital Native. This session is moderated by Marie Beelan and features David Eaton and Mike Sue.
So I'm Marie Beelan. I am a gathering participant who also happens to be a pediatrician. So I'm getting roped into wearing that hat here a few times this weekend. And I'm the mother of four. I've got kids 9 to 15. And this session is how to raise a digital native. So we've been hearing a lot this weekend about the amazing benefits of technology and the incredible things that they're allowing us to do in the world of philanthropy, evangelicism, and beyond. And so this session is more about addressing the elephant in the room, that we know that you guys read the same articles that I do in the paper, that it's not all rainbows and unicorns, that there's a detrimental side to technology and to screens that I see a lot in my medical journals. Every month I get an article with a new 10-year longitudinal study with the dark and doom of increased rates of depression and suicide and language delays and all the other things that can be associated with improper use of screens. So that's what we're here to kind of talk about, answer questions on, and we've got two great experts. We have Mike Sue, who, if you didn't get to hear him speak last night, is the director of Yellow at Snapchat. And then we have David Eaton, who is the co-founder of Access, a group that is all about how to equip parents to have the most important conversations that they need to have with their children. So with that, I'm going to open it up to Mike.
All right. I'm so excited to be here and chatting with you guys about my favorite topic, technology. I have three kids, 15, 13, and 11, a boy and two girls. And I remember when my wife was pregnant, we used to always watch these Friday night shows, these like true crime stories. And then inevitably they catch up with, you know, the killer or something like that, and they'd interview them. And the guy would start and go like, yeah, when I was younger, my dad, blah, blah, blah. And I'd stare at it and go, oh my gosh, like our parenting goals are just like not to screw them up so bad that they end up on one of these shows. So I don't know. My kids are for sure heading to therapy, but I don't know. All I want them to do is, you know, not kill anybody. Yeah. So we'll start from there. The bar is high here. I'd love to share a little bit just about parenting and then talk a little bit about technology. But I think, you know, what I've found one of the most interesting tensions as a parent is this idea that, you know, when they come out, like, you want to give them everything. Like, they're these beautiful little things, and everything you want to do is to provide them comfort and provide them safety and provide them everything you can in the world and do everything you can. And yet, everything that made me who I am today came out of pain, came out of challenges, came out of suffering. And there's this tension that you're trying to figure out, which is, like, how much pain am I comfortable letting them have and endure, knowing that that's building their character without leaving permanent scars, right? Or therapy, or, you know. And that, I think, you know, is exacerbated with technology. Is like, wow, like, I don't, you know, like, you showed the video of the shotgun blowing up the phone, right? Yesterday. You know, you know, sometimes you want to take the device away and, you know, blow it up from and just take it away, but at the same time knowing that, you know, that's not necessarily the right answer. And even yesterday at our table, at the Gen Z dinner table, I sat with Carter, who's like just finishing college. And he said, actually, when he headed into college, he decided to turn off all social media. And so he'd gone 4 years of college without any social media. And then the gentleman sitting next to me, who's been wrestling with his 15-year-old over social media and whatnot, and he was like, oh my gosh, like, what did you do that, you know, made that light bulb go on, and how do I give that to my... Yeah. And I think the thing that occurred to me was that, you know, all of us are in varying degrees of work in progress, right? Like, that didn't come to Carter until he was 18. And some of us, you know, that's not come to me. I still look at my phone and look at social media all day. And I think we always want our kids to be finished products. When a lot of times it takes, like for Carter, he went on this journey where he realized it wasn't doing it for him. And he had the rope to kind of go in there and go through that and go through some of the ups and downs of that and was able to finally own that decision on his own. And as parents, what we want is like them to reach that conclusion faster or just force them into the conclusion on their behalf. And I think that's really challenging. And the last thing I want to talk a little bit about how I think it's really important for us as parents to begin to understand that not all technology is the same, right? The idea is like, oh my gosh, let's just turn off the screen and take it away forever. But there's some really strong benefits to technology as well, right? Like during the pandemic, my daughters, every Saturday at 1 p.m. with their cousins in the Bay Area, we live in L.A., my cousins are in the Bay Area. Every Saturday at 1 p.m., they had scheduled Roblox time. And they just turn on FaceTime on one side and play Roblox on the other. And it was this way that they had actually gotten deeper in their relationship with their cousins than they ever had in the past. And so that's a beautiful thing where technology was really used for good. And I think it's really important to understand that a lot of these design decisions make a difference in how people engage. And so I shared a little bit yesterday for those of you who were there, but like in terms of a lot of technology is built based on this optimization for how to get people to spend more time in the product. And in absence of any sort of moral or human values judgment on top of it can lead to us to very dangerous places. And, you know, while I can't speak to the inside of other companies, I know at Snapchat, one of the more encouraging things I've found is that we've always started with a very human behavior, human-centric point of view. I was just sharing with them. You know, one of our first 30 employees was a sociologist who always like kind of studied how technology influences how people behave. And so just to unpack a few examples, you know, within Snapchat, we always open up to the camera. If you open up Snap, it doesn't go to a feed right away. It goes to a camera. And the thought behind that is that when you open up to a feed of, you know, which thing got the most likes, you're suddenly already dumped psychologically into a popularity contest, right? And seeing which things drive the most likes and you feel a lot of pressure then to perform or not to share at all because I don't know if I didn't go on that amazing vacation. I don't know if my content is worthy of this, right? On our content, there's never likes and comments. And so, you know, even like a popular show host, she had commented to us like, oh my gosh, this is the first time I've gotten millions of views and nobody calling me a stupid woman or go to the kitchen or stop talking about sports. You know, so we spend a lot of time thinking about how human behavior, whether something is good or not. Like we used to have a feature called Best Friends, which allowed people, like I could chat with David and then Marie could see like, oh, like David's one of the Mike's best friends, like the top five people that he chats with. And so this was driving a lot of time spent, like people would check on each other, like, oh my gosh, who is my friend talking to? Who is, you know, their friend talking to? And they driving a ton of time spent and engagement. So if you just look at the numbers, you're like, this is a great feature. But one of the things we realized was actually this was keeping people from chatting with people. Because I was like, oh, I don't know if I want Marie to know that I chat with David all the time. So I'm going to kind of slow down my conversation with him. And so we were like, this actually doesn't live up to our values. And so early on, they decided to actually kill that feature. And even our audience, you know, there were memes going around. There's, you know, bring back Best Friends during that time. And so the audience wanted it back. You know, the data said it was going up and to the right. But we felt like that didn't actually live up to value. So we decided to kill that feature. And so those are some of the examples of how technology decisions can really drive how we engage and actually how sort of what our expectations are of friends and
so appreciate as an outsider that perspective of kind of peeking under the hood that they're not the devil, you know, that there's really heart and thought behind some of these features that perhaps then get abused, but the intention behind it was coming from a really great place.
And by the way, we don't always get it right. Like, you know, and there's definitely like, you know, but it's important also internally to create space for healthy debate.
Hi, it's my turn. I'm David. And there'll be some Q&A, but I want to warn you that one of my trademarks is I know you might ask us some questions, but I'm going to ask you questions. So we'll have a little Q&A with all of you where I'm going to ask you a few questions. And so I'll get to my first question here in a moment. So I'm a co-founder at Axis. We serve 499,000, I just looked yesterday or 2 days ago, parents every single month who have about 1.2 million tweens or teens in their world. And so that's cool, and there's always more parents to serve and equip and really connect, make that heart connection. And we just did this survey, and we said, hey, does Axis actually work? And did a big old survey, had an outside group come in, and turns out that 50% of parents who read our stuff talk to their kids about it. And so we're like, that's pretty good, 50%, we'll take that, and then 60% see positive behavioral change. But the top, we also got this stat back on what are the top five things that parents come to Axis for. Number one is social media. Number two is cultural trends. Number three is screen time. Number four is mental health. And number five is sexuality. So you can see, like, this is like some huge conversations. And the phone is all about that. And actually, the number one resource we've ever had is our Parents Guide to Snapchat. So it's like so thrilling for me to hear, like, behind the scenes, like, what's going on there. So here's my first question to you. What, and you have to talk to your neighbor about this, so just know that I'll give you about a minute or two. Like, at what age should you get your kid a phone? Because I know you're going to ask me
there
that question.
There is a right answer.
All right.
If you get it wrong, you get kicked out. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a guillotine in the back.
You have about 10 seconds, so land the plane. Okay, it's time for the moment of truth. Are you ready for the answer of what age should you get or should you have gotten your, your kid a phone? Okay, so the answer is we're going to ask the doctor. And we're going to ask the technologist. So when did you get your kid a phone? Or have you gotten your kid a phone?
We haven't. So the American Academy of Pediatrics doesn't have an age on this. They believe more in guidelines instead of just very strict rules. But the guidelines are to have no screen time for kids less than 2 years of age, from 2 to 5 to do 1 hour of co-viewing, because kids don't actually learn from Sesame Street or Dora unless there's another human in the room with them to say, I don't know, Boots, will they find the map? You know, and to actually engage with it. And then from 5 on, it's less than an hour a day, with limitations in place that you're monitoring it closely. So we're blessed with a lifestyle where we have friends and family within walking distance. We engage socially a lot for our kids, so they don't have, our oldest is 15 and doesn't have a need yet to need technology in order to effectively communicate. And so that's what we've been waiting for. And so far it hasn't.
I'm sorry, so what's your oldest is 15?
15, yeah.
And she does not have a phone.
He does not have a phone.
When does he get a phone?
So he'll start driving in a few months. And so what we're planning, well, actually, he flew, we got a flip phone. My husband's in the room, and I'm remembering this now. So he flew to Florida all by himself, and he had to transfer in Atlanta. And we thought, oh man, if his flight's canceled, we probably need to know that. There are landlines that he could use, but it might be a good idea if he could text us and say, hey, guess what? I'm stuck in Atlanta. Or yay, I arrived safely in Florida and have found the people that are picking me up. So we got a flip phone that, how does it work? Is it just minutes? Yeah, it's minutes. So he calls and he's like, Mom, I'm here. No, he didn't even say, Mom, I'm here, and hung up on me because he was afraid he'd run out of minutes. It was so adorable. So that's, I think, what we'll do. When he drives, he will have an emergency phone that he can, if he gets in an accident, call us.
Okay, so we've got a flip phone coming, or currently there.
It's in a drawer.
And it's in a drawer because it's no fun. And because why would you use a phone to talk to people? I mean, let's be honest. Okay, so we got that side. What do you think, Mike?
So when my oldest, my son was 11, we started having him walk to and from school, and so decided we should get him a phone. So I went on eBay and found a BlackBerry for him, which was really frustrating because he was like, people send me emojis, and it just comes off as garbled text. I have no idea. He's like, I'm missing half the conversations. Because nobody writes text anymore. They just send emojis. And he's like, I don't know what is happening in this conversation.
So when are you going to get him a phone?
So at 13, then, he got an iPhone. And then, so my second daughter, she's 13 now, and she has a hand-me-down iPhone. And then the BlackBerry is the, you know, rite of passage. So when the youngest, she's starting to walk to and from school. And so that's the learner's permit. And but we do control which app stays, you know. So my son just started having social, like, he has Instagram and Snapchat.
So 13 is when you did social media,
Or Snapchat? No. So my daughter doesn't have social media right now. My son, 15, he does.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Thanks for letting me put you on the spot for that. Awesome. Okay. So the correct answer to when should I get my kid a phone, as you see two options here, is it is a bad question. It is a wrong question because it assumes two things that are false. So the first thing it assumes is that your kid doesn't have access to a phone already. Your kid already has a phone. Okay, so that's just straight up one of the scariest things a mom has said to me. She says, my kid is only as safe as their friend's phone. And so then I was talking to another dad. His wife is a physician as well. And he's like, my 13-year-old, awesome kid, love him. He's on the baseball team. I'm kind of concerned because he just is like, loves baseball and is like not interested in girls at all. And he's like, I was crazy about girls when I was 13. And then some switch just flipped in his brain. I was like, well, what happened? He's like, well, it's a terrible story, but he was on the bus to a baseball game and he watched porn for an hour on his friend's phone. And then every night for the next month, he was like watching porn on his phone. And so he went from like nothing to like everything. And then I find out about it a month in, and it's like, we just went from zero to like off a cliff. And so that's the first, it assumes that, so if you just assume like on that level, it's just not gonna, like they're gonna have access to a phone. So it's a different conversation. And then the other thing it assumes is like, when you get your kid a phone, that they have to have a whole phone. Like you have to go from like, here, it's just an iPhone and you're 13 or 16 or whatever, like have fun. And like, there are so many options now, and we can talk about this because there is so much pain in the marketplace that people are making options to kind of, you know, put the training wheels on. So that's kind of like a big idea. And if you're ever looking for like, you will never outsmart your kid. Okay, because they're your kid, and they are awesome, and you are awesome. The key story at Axis that had a big change for us, if you're at last night, I mean, if you're around me, you get to hear it. But we had a young lady say to us, she's like, I've only had one real conversation with my dad. And we're like, that is a huge loss. How can you only have one real conversation with your dad? And it turns out her dad is like a Christian university president. Her dad is a pastor. And her dad is on the board at Axis. So it's like, oh, Bill, no, Dr. Brown. And he is 100% one of my heroes. And then she smiled. And you're like, this is kind of incongruent. Why are you smiling right now? And she said it again. She says, I've only had one real conversation with my dad, and we've never stopped having that one conversation. And so the idea is that Jeff Johns in the back is going to have a 60-year conversation with his kid. And like, there's nothing that's going to stand in his way. Heaven help him, God help him. He is going to fight for his kid's heart. You're going to fight for your kid's heart. And there's nothing that your kid can be the president or in prison. And, you know, like, Ellen, you're going to be praying for your kid. You're going to be right there. You're going to be right there with them because you love them so much. So there is one line of defense, and that is you. And that is your relationship with your kid. Because there's a lot of resources that you can put in place, but your kid will dig a tunnel underneath the fence. They'll pull a ladder up, and they'll go around it. They'll blow it up. They'll go through it. And so, like, yes, install Covenant Eyes, and yes, there's this new thing called Canopy, and yes, there's a pinwheel phone, and yes, there's a Gab phone, and yes, there's a Relay phone, and there's all these other options. But, Brad, it's you, man. It's you having that really hard conversation, that really awesome conversation. It's you that your kid's going to call and say, like, I really like this girl. Like, I want you to meet her. And, like, those are the conversations you're going to have. Okay, so that's just, like, lay that down. You're awesome. Access is here to be your research assistant. That's our gig. Okay, so phones are, like, the biggest conversation. I want to give you four conversations you have to have with your kid about the phone. I'll do another Q&A on you here in a second, and then we'll just do a general Q&A. So when it comes to the pocket rectangle, the first conversation is about the gospel, which sounds cheesy, but the way you're going to hear it, it's going to really work. And so here's my question to you. Turn and talk to someone about this question. Okay, so it's Sherry Turkle. She's at MIT. She's really smart. And she says this statement. She says, technology is not good or bad. It is powerful and it is complicated. Technology is not good or bad. It is powerful and it is complicated. I want to know what you think about that statement. Is it true or false? Talk to your neighbor. Technology is not good or bad. It's powerful and complicated. What do you think about that? 3, 2, 1, talk. You can do it.
Are you setting them up again?
Yeah.
That's not the question you should be asking, though.
Oh, it's always a trick question. It's always a trick question.
Gotcha!
What do you think? Ten second warning. Okay, your time is up. So this is a great Axis failure story. For about probably a year or two, we put that quote up, we put Sherry's face up, we said, there it is. You know, technology is not good or bad, it's neutral, it's just powerful and it's complicated, so we've got to figure it out. And then we started talking about it. And we started talking about some more and said, hey, and so again, kind of another trick question, right? The third question is not a trick question, but
Sorry to blow your cover.
I know, no, it's good. It's good because what we like to think of at Axis is the world will always present you with like false dichotomies. And like Jesus was presented with this as like Rome or Israel. And he's like, there's a third way. And so there's almost always a third way that is beautiful and like unique. So it was the idea that technology is neutral. And so here's the first conversation to have with your kids that is so powerful and so amazing is that there is nothing that is neutral. There is nothing that is neutral. You know, when God created the world, and, you know, over multiple days, and it was evening, it was morning, it was the third day or whatever. He never said, and it was neutral. He said, it's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. It's very good. And he says, I think I'll take a nap, right? He says, when you rest, that is a temple text. He says, I'm going to live here. It's so good, I'm going to live here. I'm going to be here. So when we think about what is the gospel, it's a God who makes a very good world. And part of the very good world is there are no iPhone trees. But there are materials to create said smartphone. And the technology around us and the air conditioning that we're experiencing right now and this microphone, it wasn't there. And so that is our calling, is to be fruitful, multiply, have dominion, take care of this place and find and discover what God has hidden. So it's very good. And then it becomes fallen or broken or cursed. Fallen's kind of passive. Cursed is kind of active. So like there is a curse that happens. There is a war that's going on here. So how is something good? It's cursed. And then Jesus comes, and where Israel fails, Jesus succeeds. And so Jesus redeems and shows us a new way to be human, a way to be right side up. And so that's the amazing thing. So anything, you should say, all right, so Snapchat, kids, how's it very good? How's it busted? How's it broken? And how can we redeem it as a family? How's it good? How's it cursed? How can we redeem it as a family? So all of a sudden, you stop being the bad cop on this situation. And you start saying, let's start off in a position of celebration. Let's celebrate what is awesome. Let's celebrate everything. Let's celebrate birthdays. Hey, if it's Thursday, let's celebrate it. That is Thursday. Like, let's just celebrate as a family. So very good, cursed and redeemed. Second conversation is pretty simple, is the question of purpose. And it's just, what is it for? So you have the question of what is it for? Oh, smartphones are to, well, I want a smartphone, mom, dad. Well, great. What do you think a smartphone's for? Well, I want to stay connected. Okay, well, then you look at your dinner table and, like, dad's on email and mom's on Pinterest and, you know, the kid's keeping their streaks alive, right, on Snapchat, and the son's playing Minecraft. And it's like, well, I thought this was supposed to draw us closer together. It seems like we're not doing this well. So what is it for? Again, puts us at a position where you can have a great conversation. And you can ask that for anything. The first conversation is about the gospel, very good, cursed, and redeemed. The second conversation is about purpose. What is it for? And how it can be used. The third one, okay, so the third conversation is this idea of emancipation. It's like, hey, you're going to be out of my house someday, so we're on a journey, and we're going to get you to a journey to independence. And it's going to be like driver's ed. I'll never hand you the keys to this car. I will never hand you the keys to the car without giving you proper training, because I don't want you to kill yourself, right? I don't want you to kill somebody else. And so the phone is more powerful. And probably it's definitely the greatest leap in human agency that we'll have in our lifetime, unless something new could come out. And so it's this idea of, like, we're going to start you out super limited. And you'll see, I have a book at the book table later on called Smartphone Sanity, but there are like seven domains of the smartphone. And I wish it could be simpler, but it is not simple. And so there's seven different areas, and three of them are analog and four of them are digital, that you have to decide as a family. And so I'd say, like, the number one thing, and this is kind of weird, but you just write down what your family agrees to. Have it a written document, and it can change, but it just needs to be written down. Like, it needs to be written down that, like, a non-negotiable in our family is we don't look at pornography. Like, that just needs to be said. A non-negotiable is that there's no sexting. Like, you wouldn't believe, like, that. So we were at a school, and there was this girl just being utterly shamed because boys had asked her for a nude photo repeatedly and incessantly. And what does she finally do after being asked a million times? She sends this boy a nude photo, and what does he do? He shares it with all the other boys, right? But then we heard another girl say to us, she said, I wish boys would ask me for nude photos. Now that is heartbreaking, but you're a parent who's thoughtful, and you'd say, well, what is she really saying? She says, I want boys to want me. That's great. The currency of how you want to be wanted, though, is a little bit broken. So let's recontextualize that. So the first conversation is gospel, very good, curse, redeemed. Second conversation, what is it for, its purpose? The third conversation is, this is incremental, but you need to have a deadline. You need to have a deadline for when, like, hey, you're still in my home, like ladies in the back row there. There should be a point where, like, you're still in the home, and hopefully you have full access to a phone. Because your parents trust you, you trust them, you're on the same team. And the fourth conversation is trust. And so let me see what we got for time here. If I got one more question for you all. Yeah, well, this will be a short question. So the question, but it's a tough one. So I want you to talk to the person next to you. And the question is, could you tell your parents anything?
No.
Talk about it. I wish I could play some music so it wasn't so awkward, but.
You can sing.
Boochka, boochka. Okay. You've got 10 seconds. So, yeah, that was advice that I got from a gathering family, and I just think it's awesome. And this is one of those things that as a parent, so if you walk away from anything from this, is like tell your kids that once a week, once a month at least, frequently. Because you have to be preemptive with this. And then when they actually do tell you something, practice your I'm not shocked face. And absorb it, because they're going to test and see if they can like tell you again. Because that's what you want. You want them coming to you. You can handle it. You're not going to overreact. If you are going to overreact, go for a walk. You know, call one of your friends. Because this is so core. And this is my last little story here. And we had a young lady, her name was Harper. She's 16. She's in the youth group that I've like sort of lead when I'm not doing Access all the time. And she and her mom were super fighting about something over their smartphone. And so like, oh, David, you can help. And I'm like, yeah, I can help. Yeah, of course I can. Let's be easy. And it was a total mess. And I can't believe I fell for that trap. But it ended like really poorly. Harper ended up getting two phones, one for her mom's house, one for her dad's house. So she had effectively triangulated her parents, and so made them just fight with each other. So she retained control. But as I was walking down the steps from their house, Harper said to me with tears in her eyes, she said, David, the stricter the parent, the sneakier the teenager. And I'm like, you are awesome. I'm like, I love teenagers. They're so smart. They're so clever. That was such a mind grenade for me. And it was such a great question to ask at dinner parties. So after about like 6 months, I finally got the answer to that riddle. Because of course the stricter the parent, the sneakier the teenager. Of course that's true if you assume certain things, right? Namely, you assume a lack of trust. And so all of a sudden you're not on the same team, you're adversaries, and the phone is there to help make that so possible. But Grandpa Bob solved the riddle, and he said this. So I said, hey, Bob, strict to the parent, sneaky to the teenager, what do you think? And he said, are you raising a sin concealer, or are you raising a sin confessor? And I was like, well, how do I know? And he said, well, are you modeling confession? Are you showing your kids what it looks like to confess sins and that God forgives? And so those are the four big conversations when it comes to the smartphone that are really important. The first one is about the gospel, recontextualizes everything, puts you in a position of not complaining but celebrating. The second conversation is really basic, what is it for? The third conversation is where the rubber meets the road, it's driver's ed, like, hey, we want to get you there. We want to get you there. This is what it takes for you to prove it for us. And the fourth one is like, hey, I'm here for you. I'm your chief advocate. You're expensive, kid. I'm spending a lot for this phone. I love you. And like, let's do this right. So we're going to be a team. We're in this together. So those are the big ideas when it comes to phones.
That's awesome. Thank you for that. Well, let's open it up so that we can guide the conversation in the direction you guys want to go. Yes, please.
I'm Greg.
Hi.
Hi. 8-year-old and 6-year-old daughters are two oldest of five. We're happy they're here. They tell us everything.
Yeah, everyone should.
Thank you.
I'm gonna repeat the question for the recording. So the question is, what resources are there for parents to kind of find out about the ins and outs of these different forms, apps, technology?
I just really wish there was a group that existed to help parents. I just really wish there was something out there that just
Someone
had
should
a
found t- that.
Yeah, who could start such a thing?
Yeah, I had 25 people who woke up every single morning. I don't know.
Is that a subscription, or where would one find?
I don't know. Let's ask one of our former board members, Jeff Johns. What do you think? Is there something out there that can help parents?
So access.org, free, sign up for the free cultural translator every Friday in your inbox. This is what's happening in the life of your kids, and here's how to open a Christian worldview conversation around this. And then if you want to go a step further, you can get an all-access pass for
$10 a month.
And can you repeat that all in case someone's listening?
So I love that you asked that. Access exists to support parents and actually to support their students too. So we have a resource called the Culture Translator. It comes out every Friday and just says, here are three things going on in your kid's world and how to have great conversations about it. Here's a new slang term. Here's what's going on in Roblox this week. Or here's what, so, and again, it's just that idea that maybe you'll talk to your kid about it once a month or every other week, but you don't feel behind and you feel ready. And actually, if you go to access.org/gathering, I'll sign you up for that, and I'll give you my notes from the session if you want that, so that I can get that for you. And I'll remove you from some of our marketing emails. But yeah, that's really where it's at for us, is like that's where we're headed, and we have a lot of resources. And I would say, with like the Fortnite thing, a grandma read the Parent's Guide to Fortnite, and she played Fortnite with her grandson.
She started doing the
and that's what we wanted them to be inside that world.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's the exact right question to ask, is to really understand, like to the point earlier, is understanding. You could blanket statement mobile phone or technology and like cast like a good bad judgment on it, but like. Each of these have different uses. Why are people using it? And to your point, like understanding why we use these different products and also what they're designed to do so that we have a little bit more awareness of what it's doing to us. Like when we begin to have more awareness of like, okay, this is a potential, this is what it's really good for, and this is what its potential downsides are. Even as just adults, like, we're all sucked into these algorithms that are like doing things to us, and if we don't understand what they're doing, we don't have awareness to be able to pull ourselves out from it. No, but I need to read it, and either I'm going to high-five him or I'm going to have to take him out back and we're going to have a conversation.
Another great parent guide like that would be Common Sense Media, where you can just type in what you're looking for, the new thing that your kids just told you about, and they try to do a similar approach that Access does. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so the question is what I thought about the social dilemma, and also, what's that?
And the targeting.
Targeting, yeah. So I'll be honest, I watched the beginning of the social dilemma, and I eventually turned it off. For me, it's one of the things I think I get annoyed about in history is that we often do these things that make a lot of money, and then all of a sudden realize, hey, we might have screwed something up along the way to make all this money. Mm-hmm. And then we apologize and then tell everybody else to stop doing it. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, we did this with the Industrial Revolution. We, like, polluted the earth and made a bunch of money and then said, hey, wait, this might be bad. Like, everybody else stop doing it. And I felt like that was what I saw in the social dilemma, was like, hey, we just followed the data and we did build this incredibly addictive thing and now everybody should stop doing it. And this is why. And so I didn't have as much patience for that. And to, like, what I think is, like, and I'm glad it exists because it begins to force dialogue within the technology industry, right? And I do think there's a shift to begin to say, we can't just say, hey, the data said this. And so I'm just an innocent bystander. You know, like, I'm a basketball fan, and, you know, in the 80s and 90s, basketball was going a certain way, and they felt like, you know, it was slowing the game down, the scores were going down, so they changed the rules about how, you know, people can play defense, and magically, scoring went up, and all these different things went up, and you could say, like, if I just looked at the data and said, like, hey, you know, people are scoring better now than they used to, that's ignoring the fact that there were design changes that led to those outcomes in data. And so along the way, when we're designing technology, you know, there is a choice in how we design products. And those choices influence how the data shows up. And so I don't think technology companies can continue to just hide behind and say, like, hey, this is the data. This is just what you clicked on. So I'm just giving you more of what you want. Like, how we design products influences how people behave. Like, another example, everybody was like, oh, Snapchat at the beginning is just about sexting, right? Like, it's just these disappearing messages so nobody ever sees them. Actually, the original insight for Snap was the internet has been designed with an engineering-centric point of view about designing filing systems and, you know, and everything defaulted to permanent. And when you default to permanent, people behave differently. Like, we're having this conversation in a different way because it's being recorded. And it's going to live forever. But most of our lives we go through in ephemeral conversations. We have, you know, earlier before the start of recording, we had a very casual conversation down here, and it's very different because we behave differently because it's not lasting forever. And so why is the internet defaulting to permanence when most of our lives we go through? And that changes, that design choice changes how we behave, right? So, it, you know, on Snapchat, you know, there's definitely bad things, and we're continuing to try to evolve. I'm not saying we're perfect, but people can take a silly shot of them, you know, their triple chin, right? Because it disappears forever. But you see, when something lasts forever, then I'm going to take like 5,000 different versions of me in the sunset and pick the best one. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else sees. And so these are design choices that lead to behavior and lead to the data showing up a certain way. So that's a long way to say, like, I do think more and more accountability has to happen into, you know, not just saying like the data led us this way or the data has driven us to build this really addictive thing. We have to step back and go, how are we designing these products? And give a little bit, and I think as a technology industry, take a little bit more ownership and accountability into our design choices that lead to those behaviors.
I love that. And then as parents, and then we'll want to respect your guys' time, then we'll just go to just more of a casual time. But as parents, then the responsibility on us is to do exactly what you said, David, to look at each of these things and say, what is the good? What is the curse and how can we redeem it? And so understanding that's what's on us and that's what's on each of us as a human interacting with these things that aren't inherently evil or neutral. Each one of them had a thought that was behind it, that is good. But they, I think as you said last night too, all of these can play into our own worst instincts, as anything can, that's in this world because we live in a fallen world. So thank you guys so much for your expertise, and we can all stick around to continue the conversation. But for those who need coffee, it's